weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Roz and Emma for driving us through the afternoon. It is Friday, November 8. I'm Shane Dawson. You're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the National Chart Show at 7pm, it's FAI Cup Final Weekend. We'll hear from both Derry City manager Rory Higgins and Drogheda boss Kevin Doherty. Alan Colley previews Sunday's showdown, and Fergal Brennan joins our football chat to look ahead at a big weekend of Premier League action. Michael Corcoran and Jerry Thornley join us live from the Aviva ahead of Ireland-New Zealand, while Jane Mangan chats racing. If you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome along to the show. Welcome along to an hour of sport on 2FM. Welcome along, Alan Colley, to FAI Cup weekend.
Oh, Shane, it's like Christmas for me, it is. It's like Christmas. And it's funny enough, it's every year I say this, and I love the Cup. Absolutely love the Cup, and it's our one, I suppose, chance to showcase the league in all its glory in the Aviva Stadium and all that. But coming off the back of last week, we've been showcasing it every week, Shane, for the last number of weeks.
So. It's too mainstream now, Al.
Absolutely.
It's too mainstream.
We've normalised it now. It's not even an occasion anymore. People are all over the League of Ireland. It's great.
It's the Leinster Senior League. It's the UCL next. It's the Munster Senior League. That's what we need
Isn't it amazing that we're actually feel like we're in that position where it is everybody speaking about it. It's the talk of the town coming off the back of last week. I think there's nearly 40,000 tickets gone for this weekend as well. So it couldn't be coming at a better time, the FAI Cup final. And I was only even speaking to someone during the week about the fact that, and it probably stems from where we're coming from, Shane, in the sense that when it does get to the FAI Cup final weekend and we do want to showcase it and it's in the Aviva, and when we see these great ticket sales, we're almost kind of saying, isn't it brilliant? But we need to get to the stage where that's normalised.
We need to stop being so shocked and surprised.
Absolutely, and 40,000 is the norm, and it should be the case every time, every year. And it's kind of getting to that stage, and off the back, as you said, of last week and all the chat and discussion around Shelburne, Damien Duff, it is, it's brilliant, and long may it continue.
Yeah, we will be previewing the Sports Direct Men's FAI Cup final in due course. Couple of news headlines to get through. First, though, Rory McIlroy sits at 9 shots off the pace at the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship after a costly triple bogey on the 17th round, an otherwise flawless round for a four-time major winner. The Ulsterman posted a second successive 5-under par 67 and is on 10-under par for the tournament. Paul Waring leads on 19-under. Shane Lowry is 9-under, while Tom McKibben is 7-under par. Rory was speaking after his second round earlier this afternoon.
Yeah, I played quite nice up until that point, and even I felt like I had a nice shot into 17. It just nice flight of 5-iron, hit the downslope, you know, trundled into the bunker, and then it wasn't a great leave in the first place, but club bounced on me. There wasn't a lot of sand, and, you know, wherever the ball was in the bunker there, and I just sort of made a mess of it from there. But, you know, bounced back well, 2 good shots into the last, and made a birdie there. So just have to go out tomorrow and try to get off to a fast start and get myself back into it. I know it's out there. I was 7-under through 13 holes today, so, you know, it is possible.
Sticking with golf, Park Harrington has branded proposals to reduce fields for PGA Tour events as terrible for the sport. The PGA Tour Policy Board will this month vote on proposals to restrict playing fields from 2026 onwards, lowering the number of full-time members from 125 to 100 and cutting the number of spaces available to Monday qualifiers from 4 to 2 for 132 player events. In association football, Gavin Bazunu, Evan Ferguson and Chio Ogbene have been shortlisted for the FAI's Senior Men's International Player of the Year Award. The nominees for the Women's Award are Courtney Brosnan, Niamh Fahey and Katie McCabe. The winners of various categories of the FAI Awards will be revealed next Thursday. And finally, in Gaelic Games, Laois footballer Kieran Lillis has announced his inter-county retirement. The 34-year-old Port Laois clubman played a 20th season with the Amara County earlier this summer.
Game On.
Football.
But Alan Colley, you've been waiting patiently for 120 seconds there. I know you're just dying to get stuck into the Sports Direct Men's FAI Cup final. And the occasion, and what a brilliant occasion is, Derry against Drogheda in the Aviva Stadium on Sunday. As you mentioned at the top of the show, nearly 40,000 tickets gone for this one. Listen, before we preview and get your thoughts in detail, let's hear from both managers, Derry's Rory Higgins and first, Drogheda boss Kevin Doherty.
I don't think if you're a manager in the league and you were at the Cup final last year in particular with with the crowd and that, you couldn't try and think about, God, I wish that was me and I wish that was our team and I wish that was our club. And we did, I remember speaking about it and looking across it, and it was John Daly and Declan Devine, and I'd love that to be me, and lucky enough it is this year, but it's not about me, it's about the players and the staff and making sure that everybody's prepared for it. But yeah, it's something, of course, you enter the competition, you want to go as far as you can, and I have said this, and I've said this like a lot, this probably this week in particular, and the league is so important, and maintaining league status is ultimately, there was a goal at the start of the season, but the FAI Cup Final is a special day for, as I said, for everybody's family, for all their friends, for everything like that. But for the players, it's just about preparing right now and hopefully going and trying to win it then.
Talk to me about the difference between managing in an FAI Cup Final and playing in an FAI Cup Final.
There's a big difference. Obviously, playing three with Derry and 1-2, it's my second as a manager. It's very, very different. There's a lot of preparation goes into a final on and off the pitch and stuff that needs, so it's 24/7 as a player. You rock up, you train, you have a few meetings, you do the odd interview, but then they just look after themselves as a manager. There's so much they contend with, but hopefully all the ticket situation and all that's parked and everyone's sorted now, so we can really, really focus on what's really important, and that's performing on the pitch.
Derry manager Rory Higgins, and a little bit earlier before him, Drolobus, Kevin Doherty, both speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. Alan, going into this one, and we've kind of touched on it before, and on Monday perhaps when we were talking about Shell's victory over Derry as well, they're going into this in a really bad run of form. Is it cliched and everything else that goes along with the loaded question of you can just park it ahead of a cup final, or it does matter, you need that bit of momentum going into it?
Yeah, I think it matters, Shane, I really do. Especially, it's not just the fact that you're on a bad run of form, you've just lost the league. So that's the crucial kind of part of that when you're talking about the lack of momentum, or if they've any momentum going into it. They've just lost, and as someone says to me during the week, I read the description, I thought it was really well put, a two horse race Derry were in and finished fourth. So like, in terms of the psychological damage that could do, Shane, like, I think that's big. And if you look at, you were obviously in the Brandywell last week for Shelburne, how deflated those Derry City fans were. And even before the match, we spoke to Liam Coyle before the match last week, a Derry legend, and he was speaking about the fact that how disappointed and how down in the dumps everybody was because of the lack of them winning the league, if you like, because they were in pole position to win the league along with Shelburne right up until maybe the second last week. So that's probably something Rory spoke there about. It's a second final and he played in three, but I doubt Derry have ever come into the final where they've just lost the league in the manner that they have. So I definitely think it's a factor, whereas if you flip that over the draw, that they're coming in off the back of a really strong end to the season. Now, I know they have the playoff, but Kevin said that was the ultimate goal at the start of the season, was staying in the league, so they have the chance to do that and stay in the league. And this has almost been an extra bonus for them, which has been fantastic, because along with the league momentum that they built up in the second part of the season, they were also winning the cup matches, which was keeping them going as well, with maybe an eye on obviously eventually or potentially getting to a cup final like they have. So that's kept their season alive, whereas Derry have been under pressure week in, week out. It's almost been like the toll has been too big. It's just been too big for them. They couldn't cope with it and couldn't handle it, ultimately losing the league. So I do think that's a big factor, Shane, coming into this. And if you look at the bookmakers at the moment, and they don't often get it wrong, but they have very heavy favourites, like really strong red hot favourites. Now, they may be looking at the league table situation obviously and look where draw are, but if you actually look at what we've just spoken about there about losing the league, I don't think it's as wide as what the bookies have it.
There's obvious pressure on Rory Higgins. Will the players feel the pressure that's on the manager? I know the players themselves obviously have pressure to perform, and considering how the league form has gone, but do you feel like if when you were playing, if there was a lot of focus on the manager and, oh, his job's under pressure here, does that translate to the players?
Yeah, I think it's probably on both sides, to be honest with you, because as much as Rory is the manager and he'll take the brunt of the responsibility for them not winning the league, I think the players have to look at themselves as well, Shane. And they had ample opportunity, like we spoke about it Monday, in terms of even up to the last couple of weeks where they had the double header against Bohemians and Sligo Rovers and slipped up that weekend. Then they lost to Pats, then they lost to Shelburne. So I think as much as Rory is obviously taking the brunt of it, I think the players definitely have to look at themselves as well, because they didn't perform in a lot of those games where they dropped points. And I think it's an opportunity for them maybe to save or salvage the season, if you like, by winning the cup. And they probably owe a little bit to the manager as well, because the manager would have brought a lot of those players into Derry City, and it'd be his players. So I think they owe a little bit to the manager as well, and that could galvanise the squad. That could be a thing they've spoken about themselves during the week, Shane, whereas we're obviously focusing on the lack of form and slipping up in the league and all those factors. But inside the dressing room, if you like, in the sanctuary of that dressing room, it could be some of the senior players that are trying to rally the troops and pull people together and say, look, we owe a performance to the manager here, and maybe the supporters of Derry as well, who have followed them all season. So there, I think there's huge pressure on Derry going into this. I think it's the opposite with Drogheda. I wouldn't say it's a free hit. I don't like that phrase.
Is that too disrespectful?
I think it is, yeah, because it's because they're there on merit. They're a Premier Division team like Derry, albeit they're down near the bottom, but a lot of that is due to maybe resources and other things, not just the fact that Derry are a better team. So I don't like the phrase it's a free hit. Drogheda will be going in with the intention obviously to win it, but they'll also feel as though they can win it. It's not just a case of rocking up and hoping for the best, which a free hit suggests. I don't like that phrase at all. So I think there's huge pressure on Derry, not so much on Drogheda. And as I said, I don't see the disparity in the way the bookmakers have it. I think it's a lot closer than the way they have it.
Rightly or wrongly, Drogheda are underdogs going into this one, in the eyes of many. So will they be setting up defensively in a case of let's just not concede early here? Because even if you look at the past two cup finals, I know Pats and Derry won fairly comfortably, but before that, penalties, extra time, penalties, a one goal win for Dundalk, penalties, extra time. So there's not much in it in these finals.
No, and it's always the case, and I've been lucky enough to cover the last eight, I think it is, and I'm so looking forward to Sunday and so grateful as well, and I love being part of it. It's amazing. But they are tight, absolutely they're tight. And I agree what you said at the start there, just before that question. I'm not suggesting for one second that Drogheda are not underdogs.
Yeah.
They are underdogs. I just don't think it's as wide as what the bookmakers have it for the reasons we've just outlined. But certainly in terms of the squads on paper, absolutely they're underdogs. And it would be a big shock. That's why all the pressure is on Derry. But if you look at Drogheda's squad, and this is if I was Kevin and in Kevin's situation, because of all the things we've just outlined, and I feel as though Derry psychologically are on their knees, I would be going after them from minute one. I wouldn't be setting up feeling like I'm an underdog and trying to contain them and sitting back and setting up in a low block and thinking, oh, maybe we'll hope for the best and we'll play the game in phases in the first 15 minutes, keep it tight, and then we get to a half an hour. I don't think it's that case at all. I think, and they've already proved to beating them in the most recent meeting. Now, it was in Drogheda. Drogheda beat them 2-1 in the last time they met. Now, before that, Derry had beaten them 5-1 in the Brandywell. So the games have been tight enough, if you like, so bar that one. And even Kevin said up until the point where they scored, I think, the last three goals late on, but it was very tight for an hour. So I don't think it's a case that they should... They'll obviously show them respect, but I don't think they should be showing them too much respect that they have to just sit off the game and think we can hope for the best to maybe get to extra time and penalties. I think Derry are there to be got at, and I think Drogheda have the players to get at them as well, particularly in those forward areas with Franz Piero and Douglas James Taylor as well, and they were the ones that caused all the problems for Derry in the most recent meeting.
So call it for me when it's all said and done. How is it going to play out, Alan?
I do think Drogheda have a great chance for the fact that they've lost the league. There's no getting away from that. Derry blew the league. As much as you're a happy man and we love the Shelburne story and Damien Duff and all that stuff, but Derry had an unbelievable chance to win the league this year and they blew it. So that has to have an impact on them coming into this. Can they salvage the season by winning the cup? They'll feel as though they can, but I think it's an unbelievable opportunity for Drogheda, and I would love to see Drogheda win, Shane.
We shall see. It's going to be a cracker for Sports Direct Men's FAI Cup Final on Sunday. Live coverage on RTE Radio 1. Before we move on to chat Premier League and Europa League, Conference League, Stephen Bradley, now credit to John Fallon of The Examiner for tweeting this. Stephen Bradley mentioned there's a 97% chance probability that they will qualify. Only 3% chance of another point is required for a playoff in the Conference League. 9 points seems the projected cut for direct progression to the last 16. And there is an unofficial estimate the prize money for Rovers is a 5.55 million euro. And Ireland will be ranked 32 in the coefficient. So big numbers there, Alan. Big numbers.
And fully deserved as well, Shane. Fair play to them. regardless of who it is that they've been drawn against, you still have to go out and perform, and they performed really, really well again last night. I think 2-1 probably flattered TNS. I think it probably could have been 3 or 4. They were so dominant in that second half in particular. Dylan Watts, who's coming off the back of a brilliant season, player of the year for Shamrock Rovers, was outstanding again last night, and they've put themselves in an unbelievable position, Shane. 7 points, as you say, in touching distance of qualification, which they will get. It's just a question of maybe whether it's through the playoff or direct into the knockout, and that's what Stephen Bradley is pushing for. And why wouldn't they now, Shane? And again, it's a good news story. Like, we've had such a great week with the League of Ireland, we don't want this to end. And even though other clubs might be looking on a bit envious, I think it shows that there's opportunities there now, particularly with the Conference League. And if you think of Shelburne going through the Champions route now, Shane, because effectively that's what's helped Shamrock Rovers, and that's the route to go if you want to get yourself into a group stage, if you like, because you do have to fall back if you do lose in the earlier rounds of the Champions League, the Europa League, and I suppose that's why the Conference League was designed. So Shelburne will have all that next year as well, and they can look forward to potentially, I suppose, huge money like that, or getting themselves through rounds or a group stage or whatever the case may be. Because whatever way we look at the hierarchy of UEFA from top to bottom in it, you can say it's kind of, I suppose it's lopsided in one sense. It does give an opportunity to Conference League to the smaller countries, and I suppose that's where we see ourselves, Shane, and that's where we're at, and I think it's brilliant for Shamrock Rovers.
Most certainly is. Good for the league.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
Good for the league. Listen, we're going to move on to a Premier League conversation. And do you know what? Would you like some pointless stats, Alan?
Shane, I love a pointless stat from Shane Dawson.
Well, I'm going to
makes my Friday night.
That's why this is why I provide. I'm going to go to Fergal after this. But first, Opta have calculated the clubs who are currently overperforming their expected points at this point in the season. Nottingham Forest have an expected 15.8 points after 10 games, but they've actually amassed 19, having only lost one game so far. Defending champions Manchester City have an expected 18.8, but are on 23. Top of the table, Liverpool have an expected 20.8, but actually have 25. Brighton an expected 13.5, but have 16. But interestingly, Arsenal are ninth in the table for expected points. So for all of the talk of Arsenal missing a striker, they're actually winning more points than expected. So Ferg,
I've heard of expected goals, but expected points. Are we the old? Well, I give you old school expected points before you bring Fergal. Sorry, Fergal. I was in dress rooms with managers where you'd look at the next six fixtures and you'd write down 3 points, 1 point, 3 points, and that's the way it used to work years ago, Shane.
Well, I don't know how Manchester can get 18.8 points by however. Fergal, I don't know. Is there much point now in predicting the Premier League matches after that?
I mean, point is the word. Is there much point in predicting predicted points? And Peter Piper picked a point. I don't know. It's a difficult one because there is a lot of stats involved in football now, and I'm firmly on board with it. You know, I think it's certainly made my job easier, and it's helpful in the sense of if you're trying to back up a point that you're making, that you feel in your gut and you find a nice juicy statistic to go with it. But yeah, expected points, I'm still a big believer in you do see the game in front of you. Stats are there to help you and, you know, to kind of build an argument and to write pieces and to talk about it, but a huge amount of it does still exist of what you see in front of you, particularly when you're at the ground or even if you're just watching it on the television.
Okay.
If you're following a team, if you're following a particular player, that's what you base it on.
I heard a good pointless one last night while I was watching Manchester United.
Go on.
Amad Diallo, and apparently he tweeted this himself or he put it on Instagram or something. He's the 7th most progressive dribbler in the world. And to be fair to Robbie Savage, he says to the commentator, will you settle down? 7th.
Well, listen, Fergal, in old money, can Brighton look to capitalise on City's slump?
Yeah, but I wouldn't necessarily read too much in terms of City's form, because we know the quality that they've got and we know the experience that they've got to dig themselves out of this type of situation. This is more about Brighton. The issue with Brighton is that nobody wants Brighton or Herzler to change the way that they're playing, because it's exciting to watch, particularly for the neutrals, a high defensive line. He's built on the good stuff that Roberto De Zerbi had and for my money, made them better than you were under De Zerbi, particularly at the back end of last season. But it's too much of a basketball game with them. And when you come up against Manchester City, who are stung from that loss in midweek away in Lisbon, yes, they are having their issues. This could be a wild, wild game tomorrow night. I'd be expecting plenty of goals, plenty of action, because Brighton won't take a backward step, and they shouldn't. But in saying that, you're just looking at some of their results of late, and no, as I say, they shouldn't be turning into a kind of Stoke and just shutting up sharp and defending what they've got in certain games. But they've let situations slip away from them. And you go back to the Wolves game a few weeks ago, going into the final 5 minutes, they were 2-0 in front. They lost. They were in front at Liverpool last weekend. I was covering that game, and they were really good. Liverpool couldn't find a way to break them down. But they just hand games over to teams. That will be my concern for them tomorrow. They'll cause City problems. I fully expect them to get on the score sheet. But City, when they get back in gear, which they will, whether that's this weekend or after the international break, they don't allow teams back in that way. And Brighton, if I was to have one criticism of them, that's what they need to learn. They need to learn to just be a little bit cuter in winning positions, particularly late on in games, because that could be the difference between Europe and no Europe next season.
Alan, you were speaking about Manchester United. I meander to their neighbours there, but if we meander back to Manchester United and Ahmad and his progressive dribbling and the interim manager of Ruud van Nistelrooy, they had a win last night, Manchester United, to take on Leicester at 2 p.m. on Sunday. Were you impressed with what you saw last night that could translate into the Premier League this weekend, or was it just an average performance against an average team?
Yeah, I thought it was very poor, Shane. I wouldn't go as far as saying it was abject, but I definitely think it was very pedestrian and kind of similar to what we have seen under Ten Hag in recent weeks. I just don't think they're very good, and everybody kind of knows that. But particularly when you're playing against opposition that likes a Pauk, like, they should be so much better than them. And it looks like kind of Pauk had their chances towards the end, and it just looks like they're on the same level as them. Whereas you watch the Champions League the night before, and I watched Inter Milan and Arsenal, it's like watching a different sport in terms of the intensity and the quality and the way Inter Milan defended against Arsenal as well. So well organised, so well set up, so disciplined, yet and all was a threat on the counter attack. Even Arsenal, I thought, probably up to the edge of the box, played quite well, but they just lacked that bit of cutting edge. But it's almost like watching a different quality of game. And then you watch the Europa League last night, and as I said, it was just more of what we've seen. Now Van Nistelrooy came out afterwards and obviously built it up a little bit, and he's only going to be there for one more game. To answer the question about can it transfer to the league, I think it could transfer to beat Leicester, because I don't think Leicester are all that, to be honest with you. But in terms of transferring to the Premier League, with the likes of Liverpool and Man City and Arsenal, they're a million miles off them.
The whole narrative and the conversation, Fergal, around Ruud van Nistelrooy, and I think half the questions put to Ruud yesterday on the coverage, on the broadcast coverage, was have you checked your phone? Has he recalled you or anything?
Yeah.
Like, how distracting is that for players and for Ruud that's the narrative here, as opposed to trying to actually get results on the board?
In terms of a distraction, it's difficult to gauge, but I just think it's unnecessary. Like, I understand, and, you know, we've all sat in press conferences where questions have to be asked. They know the answer to that. They know that he's going to say, my focus is on the games in hand. Obviously, Pauk last night, Leicester this weekend. Amorim's got to play Sporting Braga this weekend. That is the situation. And I think from Van Nistelrooy's perspective, it's not a distraction, because he's known from the get-go. I think the chances of him maybe having the gig until the end of the season only lasted for about 24 hours. Immediately, that move for Amorim got made. In terms of the players, if they're distracted, that's a problem. Every member of that Manchester United squad, particularly those that have been underperforming for 6, 12, 18 months, should be thinking, Amorim's going to be watching this game tonight. He's going to be watching us against Leicester at the weekend. I need to be showing him that I've got a place in his plans, because I'm very interested to see how he does it when he comes in, the talk of changing tactics and changing players around. He's a very firm operator. And there's a lot of Manchester United players that their level has just dropped. And I think in January, and definitely next summer, we could see some big players being moved out if they don't get with the programme of what he wants from them. So distracted, no. But if they're not using this as a means to up their performance level, they might not be a Manchester United player next season.
Okay.
Well, on that as well, Shane, even with Fergal, Fergal's in there about their level dropped. I don't even think their level is where it needs to be. A lot of them, in a lot of cases, there's players there who are just nowhere near the level. And when you compare that to obviously a Liverpool or a Man City, and they're...
But is that because they don't have it in them, or they're just not operating to the level.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they're good enough.
Okay.
Actually don't think they're good enough. People will say under Ten Hag maybe wasn't getting the best out of him, but I don't think players like Dalot, or it doesn't matter who the manager is, he'll never have it for that level. He might have it for a Fulham.
He's a progressive dribbler, Alan.
No, that's Ahmad.
That's Ahmad, sorry.
Yeah, he's the progressive.
Oh, Dalot. I said Diallo.
And I could go through a list of them. There's loads of them, I think, that are just nowhere near the level. And you need to compare them to the best. And when you look at, obviously, the best being Liverpool and Man City and Arsenal and even the top teams in Europe, there's players there who are operating at Manchester United, and they should be nowhere near Manchester United.
OK, well, Ruud van Nistelrooy has says he wants a Man United manager's job one day. Who knows if he will be part of Ruben Amorim's plans when he does take charge on Monday. You cover the Liverpool beat often, Fergal. They play Aston Villa tomorrow night, actually, 8 p.m. kickoff on that one. Will Liverpool expect a big response from Villa, who, I suppose, they're on a bit of a poor run of form at the moment?
They are. I mean, the game in midweek where they lost to Club Bruges was bizarre, whether, you know, you kind of go to the absolute letter of the law book and why the penalty was given away. Unai Emery was absolutely seething after the game. I think they will get a response, and this is a Villa team that, regardless of the kind of little blip that they're having, they've shown enough over the last 12 to 18 months to demonstrate that they are right there on the edge of the top four, either Champions League or Europa League level side. The issue is Liverpool just look like a steamroller at the moment. I covered the Bayer Leverkusen game on Tuesday night, and there always seemed like another gear to them. Leverkusen were good in parts. I wouldn't say Liverpool were toying with them, but you just felt that the minute it clicked, they just roll past Leverkusen. And Leverkusen are not having the start to the season that they would have expected in Germany, but they're still the defending German champions. Aston Villa are doing really well, aside from the last couple of weeks where it's been a bit wobbly. But Liverpool, particularly at home, they just have an ability to either bury teams early on or react when they need to. Dig in, the power of the crowd. It's going to be a night game tomorrow, Saturday night. I just don't see anything other than a Liverpool win, because Arne Slot's been very clear about setting mini targets throughout the season. He'll want to go into the international break top, possibly even with a little bit of an increase in their lead. They know that the Champions League is pretty much sorted in terms of a knockout stage place. This is where they want to put the hammer down in the Premier League, because City, as you mentioned, are struggling a little bit, and Arsenal too, their form has dropped off. So Liverpool want to open up a bit of a gap, and I fully expect them to win tomorrow night.
It's like small changes that are working for Liverpool. Luis Diaz being deployed as a central striker, that just these small little tweaks by Arne Slot are making them tick.
Yeah, and I think that's, I suppose, to be honest with you, Shane, because he has those options, that's the beauty of it for Arne Slot, because I think he'd be playing Jota through the middle. I'm not sure he's mad on Nunes, and he has really flattered to deceive. He's struggling, Nunes. It's just that he's in a really good team. He's getting away with it, I think, at the moment. But if Jota was fit, he'd be playing through the middle, and then I think it's a question of whether you play Gakpo wide left or Diaz. But Diaz had such an unbelievable start to the season. He had to play. But then, to be fair, when Gakpo got his opportunity, he stepped up in the last two or three weeks, and you still are able to play Diaz now through the middle in the games, particularly the one during the week. So I think that's the beauty of having, I think he has five top quality striker / forward players, if you like, and he has to pick three out of the five. But Nunes is the one who I think he's still unsure about, but yet the other four are absolutely brilliant. And in fairness, the midfield options are something similar. Curtis Jones has flitted in and out, but he's been brilliant in the last couple of weeks. You have McAllister, Gravenberch, Szoboszlai has been a little bit in and out, but I think he's a great player as well. And then defensively, they're so sound. So I think Liverpool are in such a really, really strong position. They're a fantastic team. He's done a great job, Slot. Like everybody was saying after the international window, that this is really going to test them. But they've come through all those games that people were saying would potentially, this is where we're going to find out where they're at. But they've come through all those games. And I think they'll beat Villa as well. I watched Villa against Bruges during the week, and they were really, really poor. I think they're struggling at the moment just to contend with the chopping and with the competitions and chopping and changing. Now, Emery obviously has huge experience in doing that, but I just think it's a higher level of Champions League having to contend with the league, maintaining, I suppose, the progression that they were on in the Premier League, and also contending in the Champions League. So that's where I think Villa are coming a little bit unstuck at the moment. And you have Tyrone Mings, who should be playing in Croke Park as well, doing stupid things like that, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous. And for anyone to think that oh, it was harsh. And I heard some of the commentators during the week saying that it was absolutely ridiculous what he did. And he knew as well that Martinez had taken the goal kick. They're all doing that now, Shane, where the goalkeeper puts it down and plays to the centre half on the 6 yard box. So I thought that was a really, really schoolboy error for Mings.
It was a tap and go. Michael Corcoran and Gerry Thorne will be proud of it, who we will be chatting to very shortly. Before we do though, I want to get your thoughts, Fergal, on High Flying Forest, because Nuno Espirito Santo has been named Premier League Manager of the Month for October, and that completes a double of awards for Forest, with striker Chris Wood earlier being named Player of the Month. What's been happening for Forest? Because it is great to see an old school club like this near the top of the table.
I think they're just benefiting from the fact that tactically Nuno Santo is a very good coach. I think consistently to manage a team that would be pushing for top four or top six, maybe not. But what he's very good at doing is making the best of, and I mean this in the most generous way possible to Forest, making the best of quite meagre resources. Now, they've obviously had a bit of chaos in the past of the amount of players that they've been buying, but he's done something very good at Forest and bought a lot of players that were kind of on the maybe list of being Premier League level. Elanga, obviously United, Callum Hudson-Odoi previously at Chelsea, Morgan Gibbs-White at Wolves, Chris Wood has bounced around for various teams, and he's harnessed them into the team and said, I think you're all Premier League level players. Go and prove it to me. Go and prove it to every coach and player and fan who's ever doubted you. And it's clicked. And I think defensively, you throw in the fact that they're really, really well structured and they're not frightened to back themselves to defend a lead. I mentioned there before about Brighton, who don't look comfortable defending leads for all of their attacking firepower. Forest have got a position where they go, the pace of Elanga and Hudson-Odoi will get us up the pitch and cause a few problems. Chris Wood's banging in goals and he'll always cause problems for defenders. And if we need to defend, we'll defend. So it's a lot of balance. They're obviously in a good moment and they're doing something which teams that are kind of mid-table, because you do expect them to drop off, they're doing something that needs to be done, which is when you're in form, get those results, get those points in the bank, get to Christmas, get to the end of the calendar year where you're 20 to 30 points, so that in the new year, you can, you know, kind of have a go for Europe and you know, really push it, because you're not having to look over your shoulder as much over the potential of relegation. I think they'll keep it going for a little while. I don't think there's any danger long-term that they're going to be challenging for Europe. Sorry to any Forest fans who think differently. But yeah, it's just a really good balance of an astute, experienced manager, players with a point to prove, and a plan. It sounds very boring, but a plan to go out every Saturday and know exactly what you're doing can yield results at a Premier League level.
Okay, Alan Colley, final word to you. Chelsea Arsenal Sunday, 4:30. The goals were going in by two against Noah last night for Chelsea. He was going to come out on top on Sunday afternoon.
I think this is a huge game for Arsenal. Now, the good news for them was Odegaard obviously came back on for a few minutes during the week. They need him badly, because I mentioned briefly earlier on, I watched the Inter Milan match, yeah, and they played quite well, to be fair, Shane, up until the edge of the box, and they were just so toothless in attack. So I think with Odegaard back, it's a big plus, massive plus. They need him back. They need probably Rice back as well. And they need a win, because they can't let that gap get any wider between Liverpool and Man City. So I think it's huge that they get a victory on Sunday.
Okay, great. So Alan Colley, Fergal Brennan, thank you both very much. Alan, enjoy the cup final
Sunday.
I'll speak to you on Monday. I'll be speaking to Michael Corcoran and Gerry Thorne after the break. Stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
RTE
2FM. Rugby.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention to rugby. And Michael Corcoran joins us on the line. He will be commentating on Ireland versus New Zealand this evening in the company of Donal Lennon over on RTÉ Radio 1. Joining Michael at the moment is Irish Times rugby correspondent Gerry Thornley. So I'm delighted to have the two lads on the line. Michael, if I come to you first, Ireland, New Zealand. Has the aura and the fear evaporated when New Zealand come to town these days, unlike times of long gone when they were handing out routine hammerings to Ireland?
No chance, actually. I think it's grown, to be fair, over the years. You know, many years ago, one of the Kiwis said to me, I was there, I think probably Jerry was there as well, after another thrashing of an Irish team down in New Zealand, that the way you earn respect is A, by beating them, and B, by beating them at home, as in New Zealand. Now, we've accomplished that, obviously, and we've done it quite a few times in the past. We've won our last two matches at home against them here at the Aviva Stadium. So the aura is not there. Like, they're massively agitated all this week. a bit perplexed why the match is on a Friday. That's one thing. And then I think obviously Johnny Sexton must be trying to sell books or something in New Zealand at the moment, because Rico Ioane is tipped to lead the Haka tonight to respond to Johnny Sexton's comments in the book. So they're getting very agitated about it. We're comfortable in our own skin, given the fact that we've beaten them so often. 5 wins out of the last 9. Obviously, they beat us at the Rugby World Cup. So, no, you couldn't get a ticket for this game. You couldn't get a ticket for the New Zealand 15 against Munster, a shadow Munster team and very much a shadow New Zealand team. And Thomond Park last week, 27,000 people there. So, absolutely not. No chance that this is dying or going away anytime soon.
The League of Ireland is over, Michael. We have to fill Friday night with some form of sport, you know. So
that's okay. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
Jerry Thornley, how big a motivating...
I'm glad tonight's game serves a purpose.
How big of a motivating factor is settling that World Cup score for Ireland? So,
no, I don't think anything can possibly settle that score. But it is a motivation at the same time. If that doesn't sound a bit too Irish. I mean, Andy Farrell has denied revenge as a motive. It reminded me of the week building up to quarter-final, when Rico Ioane and one or two others of the All Blacks were being asked at press conference if revenge was a motive for their series defeat at home to Ireland, which something no Irish team had ever done to an All Blacks team before. And they batted away pretty forcefully and they, you know, gave it really short shrift. But then we could obviously see in Rico Ioane's immediate post-match reaction that revenge had been indeed a big motive. So I think revenge is a motive, but I don't think it'll feel, if Ireland were to win tonight, it would feel very good for the night that's in it and the immediate aftermath. But that's and will banish to a degree some of those memories, but they'll be there again in 4 years' time if Ireland make another quarter final, you can be sure of it.
Michael, you mentioned obviously Ioane leading the Haka, and it is going to be some atmosphere this evening. Will the Aviva Fortress Aviva play a part in this evening's proceedings?
I think it will. We're 19 games unbeaten here now, and I always think there's something really cool and special about playing under lights, playing at night. I remember years back when they were doing up Thomond Park, Munster played Waston in a game, and I think capacity was only about 12,000 people. I was talking to Lawrence Dallaglio after the match, and he said, what was the capacity? I said, 12,000. He said, geez, he said, in the dark, drizzle, everybody with a few pints on board, it sounded as if there's about 60,000 there. Now, obviously, the capacity here is 50-odd thousand. I think it's going to be that in spades, basically, to be fair about it. And If our mate Rico does lead the Haka, he'll get a response from his own team, but he'll get a response from the Irish team. But in turn, he'll get a response from the Irish crowd and the crowd who were here at the game as well, because everybody is gagging for something here this evening. That's the reality, and it isn't to get something to quench your thirst. They want to get involved in this one, and they want to see Ireland winning against the All Blacks. So will it take away the pain of the World Cup? As Jerry said, not a chance. There's no chance. That's going to be... going to carry that till the day we leave the earth. That's the reality about it. But this is a big one, and it has the feeling of a big one.
New Zealand, already 2 games into their tour, largely second string outfit, beating Japan 64-19 2 weeks ago. They escaped Twickenham with a 24-22 victory in which England missed 2 late kicks to win it. So Jerry, tactically, what should we expect from New Zealand this evening?
I think this team is very much in transition under Scotty Robertson. I think that he made a statement of faith in Damien McKenzie, starting him in all 3 warm-up tests, then all the first 5 of the Rugby Championship games, and then abandoned faith in him and turned to Beauden Barrett, whom he had lost faith in as either an out-half or fullback along the way. And Barrett then gets concussion last week. In fairness to McKenzie, he came on very well and did very well in the last quarter. That touchline conversion compared to George Ford's penalty against the post was essentially what won the match. And fair play to him. I think personally myself, McKenzie is better suited to the number 23 in his back. He's very good impact replacement. When the game loosens up in the last 20 or 30 minutes, he can come on at out half, he can come on at number 12, he can come on at 15 and really transform the game. He's X factor, and they've got a lot of X factor, and that's what they rely on. I don't think this is a great New Zealand team, but I think it has several great players in it, and none better than the two biggest changes in this All Blacks team since the World Cup, apart from the new coaching staff. In its actual team, it's a much changed team, unlike Ireland. But they've uncovered a jewel, an absolute diamond in Wallace Satiti. It's like having Brian O'Driscoll in your back row. You won't believe this guy's footwork. That dummy he did in the Australian game, I had to rewatch it about 20 times. It made you gasp. And then the same last week, their ability to score out of absolutely nothing. There was a ball going back in their own 10-metre line last week, and Wallace Satiti picked it up, turned, did George Martin, like a kipper, sprinted through half the English team, and if he gets the offload away, it's a try underneath the English post within 4 seconds, 5 seconds of Wallace Atiti picking up the ball. The other big change in trying to accommodate Barrett or McKenzie at 10, he did move Will Jordan to full-back. I don't know whether Will Jordan's strike rate necessarily goes up at full-back, but he is probably the best attacking player in the world. And when you play your best attacking player, ideally you could always have your best attacking player at full-back because he can't be marked there. He can run trailers behind Rooks, behind Barrett, like he did for the scissors try, and he can have more of an impact from full-back, I believe. So their threat from turnover ball transitions, from loose kicks, is greater than any other team in the world. So in other words, Ireland could have 75% of this match in terms of territory, possession, and still lose because the All Blacks are capable of scoring 21 points in the flash of an eye.
Do we have the personnel, Michael, to nullify the likes of Wallace Atiti and that All Black flair that Gerry has outlined there?
I'm not sure if the word I do, I'd agree with the word nullify. We certainly have players to take him on, but that back row with Satiti, Sam Kane and RD Savea, they work superbly well together. And that's one area that I would be, I have to say, really concerned about. They're up against three very good players from an Irish point of view. Peter O'Mahony to come off the bench if he's needed. I think our bench is going to be crucial this evening. I mean, the New Zealand have five players on their bench with less than 10 caps each. We have three players who've got 300 and odd. I can't even remember. It's such a high number between the three of them, between Peter O'Mahony, Keane and Conor Murray. 356 caps between the three of them. So if it's tight enough going down the stretch, we have the kind of nous to bring us home. But as Gerry said, you know, Wallace Atiti's been brilliant. Will Jordan is just, I think he's just class. And their two wingers as well, Mark Talia Caleb Clark. I mean, they can... Our kicking has got to be spot on. That's the reality about it. I think they'll fancy taking us on the scrum. I think they'll like the fact that Tyke Furlong is not involved, even though no disrespect to Finlay Beelan, who's been really good in the times that he's come in. They have a 140 kg player, which in our language is 22 stone, starting. Williams. And they have another one to come off the bench as well. You know, just when you thought the bigger fellow was getting tired, you have an even bigger fellow to come on.
Well, that's why you've hit on something very important there in that bench, in picking Ian Henderson in the second row cover. It's to provide that kind of horsepower behind the tight end as well in the last 20 or 30 minutes. And you mentioned the experience of Peter O'Mahony for the line-out. I think it's a clever bench. It's designed to win this game. There's no thinking of tomorrow or next week or anything else. It's just to win this game.
And there's one other thing which I hasn't been mentioned or spoken about at all. But the three players I've mentioned, Keane Healy, Conor Murray and Peter O'Mahony, perhaps this is the final chance they'll ever get to take on the All Blacks and beat the All Blacks.
Yeah.
And as we know, that hasn't happened that often, Gerry. That's really.
And you know, Conor has a very good record against. He's got a very good record against the All Blacks, particularly when you add in the lines. So I think it's been a very astute pick. And you need physical strength against these guys as well. And he gives you that in the same way Henderson does.
Yeah, I think that Andy Farrell will have looked at the England game last week and will have learned a lot from the end game, if you understand, Shane. You know, given the fact that you know, England. You know, with the greatest respect them, with Harry Randall and George Ford, they didn't manage the game well. It was 15 against 13. They didn't manage the end part of the game well in terms of trying to close that one out, and they could have closed it out. That's the reality.
Big time.
And I think that's what, as Gerry has said, and I'm saying, that's why Ireland have picked the bench they've picked tonight, because they want that experience there and they want to see this home. I mean, we're talking about only a sixth ever victory against New Zealand if it does happen this evening.
We should never get blasé.
Like 5 out of 9, we're all thinking, geez, aren't we great fellas all together, to be fair about
it. Let's not forget it was none out of what, 28?
It was not out of so much, and Gerry and I have been there.
You know, honestly, you want to take the tradesman's exit after some of those games in New Zealand.
We could talk about the 60-0 defeat in Hamilton.
That was a grim night.
Which was dreadful, and we scurried out of the place as quick as we could.
10 years later, we're in a series there.
That's exactly the point. Yeah, so it's we're not too picky, like, to be fair about it. Yeah, so if it happens, Shane, which I think we've got a great chance, but if it does happen, it'll be special, because it always is special, because everybody likes to judge themselves against New Zealand, regardless of whether they're the world champions or otherwise. And this is a perfect opportunity for some players who've never played against them, never won against them. The likes of Jack Crowley, the likes of Jamie Osborne, if he comes off the bench, people like that. It's a huge, huge night for them.
It's a different rivalry now, Shane. Mm. It's completely different. You're asking what the atmosphere will be like. It's a proper rivalry now, whereas before it really wasn't a rivalry at all when one side kept winning. And I think it's changed in terms of expectations, but there's also a little bit of residual anger there about the manner of that quarter-final defeat, a game that Ireland could have won, maybe should have won, on a different night would have won, in the same way that the All Blacks could have won the World Cup final. Mm. They could, you know what I mean? That's, those were the margins, but I think you'll have a massive crowd here. And the great thing about the hack is it gets an Irish crowd seated 15 minutes before kickoff. Still the only thing I know that achieves this modern phenomenon in world sport, getting an Irish team seated 15 minutes before kickoff. Oh. Friday night, it'll be epic.
Okay, great stuff. Michael Corcoran, Gerry Thorney, thank you both very much for joining us here. Kickoff is at 10 past 8 with live radio coverage on RT Radio 1. Michael Corcoran will be joined by Donal Lennon on commentary.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
Racing.
Now, as is tradition of a Friday, Jane Mangan is with us to chat racing. Jane, how's the form?
Everything is good. It's a little bit of a low-key weekend because we're just after the indigestion of Robbie Dolan winning the Melbourne Cup on Tuesday morning and then the Breeders' Cup and Down Roy last weekend. So, Shane, it's a little bit more relaxed this weekend.
That's okay. That's allowed. We need a couple of quieter weeks, I suppose. Listen, come here before we talk about any specific races or indeed meets. I want to ask you about the weather, because we're having a prolonged period of dry weather, nice and mild, which is all well and good for the average punter going about their day, but it's having a somewhat detrimental effect on racing.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to begin by complaining about the weather, because to everybody else, it's very pleasant. We get to go out and exercise and get to work without getting drowned and wet, and we can see what's happening in Spain in contrast to here. But it's so unusual by the middle of November to be still in the mid-teens in Celsius, to be still dry and racing horses on what looks like very good ground. Today in the UK, we had a horse called Captain Teague win a race worth £40,000. He was the only runner in the race because his opponents didn't run because the ground conditions were too quick, too dry for their preference. And if you look at the cards this weekend, where again we're badly hit, you know, punters need 8 runners to get each way betting. Well, in Wincanton tomorrow there's 7 races, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them have 6 runners or less. One of the feature races at Wincanton, grade 2 hurdle, has 3 runners. We have it the same here at home. Goran Park tomorrow. Okay, there are some big fields. The maidens and the handicaps are big. There's a handicap chase with 6 runners and the mayor's beginners chase is 6 runners. And then on Sunday, we'll be talking in a minute about Marine National coming back. Well, he's going to face 4 opponents. And in the Fishery Lane Novices Hurdle, another feature on that NACE card, just 4 runners. So I think there's an awful lot of horses around the country ready and fit to run, but they need the skies to open.
Like, excuse the ignorance here now. I know I'm a novice when I'm in the company of yourself or Ruby when we're chatting racing, but a horse on his own in a 40 grand race, surely that's unheard of.
I know. It's actually not. It's very rare. But basically, if you're Man United and you turn up to take on Man City, if Man City don't tog out, you get your 3 points. And that's it. That's ultimately, you can only beat what's put in front of you. And today, for Captain Teague, there was nothing put in front of him.
That is wild stuff. Come here, you mentioned the feature chase at NACE there, the Barbastown Castle. How heartening is it to see the return of Marine National?
Yeah, it is. It is nice because I suppose everybody expected so much of him as a novice chaser, given his reputation from winning the Supreme Novice as a hurdler. He won his beginner's first time at Leopardstown in emphatic style, and he went automatic favourite for the Arkle at Cheltenham. But his next start, and his only other start last season, he blew out at the Dublin Racing Festival. Now, that was in grade 1 company. It was a massive step up in class, but he clearly wasn't the horse that we had seen all along. So this will be his first time running since February, and he's got to be kept honest. Like, Quilixios is a good horse. Hercule de Soy is likely to be a pace horse, and Lucid Dreams will probably go with him. So it looks like it's going to be a proper run test. But I suppose the key part, and in cohesion with what we've just been speaking about, Marine National likes quicker ground conditions. He likes good ground. He's certainly going to get that in NACE on Sunday.
Also on the domestic front, Goran Park, what catches the eye?
Yeah, Goran Park, again, as I said, it's not their best card. There are some nice runners at the meeting. The Mayor's Beginners Chase, the first race where I think Nara for JP McManus and Henry Bromhead is very well treated because she's still a 4-year-old. She takes on Airdrop, who ran a really good race at Listowel behind San Salvador in a novice chase there. She's quite good, but she does jump a little bit erratically. I hope she's learning as she goes along. There's a handicap chase there at 1 o'clock. The big chap for Paul Flynn. I know Paul was a little bit disappointed with him in graded company last time at Down Royal. I think dropping down in class and dropping down a little bit in trip will help him as well. So they're the two main meetings at on the domestic front this weekend. There is also some Irish runners across the water. Wink Canton, I mentioned there was only three runners in the grade two hurdle there over 2 miles, with Henry de Bromhead sends across Aspire Tower, who came back with a winning at Punchestown just 2 runs ago. And there's a novice chase there, a grade two race as well, where Ben Pauling's handstands looks like he's going to be hard to beat. So there's bits and pieces around this weekend, but as I said, every weekend can't be Melbourne Cup and Breeders' Cup.
No, that's fair, that's fair. Listen, Jane, before I let you go, I'll put you on the spot. Pick of the weekend?
Nara in the Mayor's Beginner's Chase. I think she's very well treated, but I hope to see Marie Nationale back to somewhat like his former swagger and hopefully get him back in business for the season ahead.
Here's hoping. Great chatting as always, Jane Mangan.
Game on.
Racing.
That is all we have time for. Big thanks to Andrew and Max for working on the show. Blatt and Tracy is up next with the National Chart Show. From all of us here at Game On, we'll chat to you Monday 6.
RTE 2FM.